Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
We're on the Not a Thing podcast. Yay. As in we, like you and me, are on the Not a Thing podcast. It's amazing.
We are, just the two of us.
Yes, just this time. We didn't get a guest for this, now the penultimate show of our impending triple-digit episodes. It's pretty exciting. Although we did kind of talk about how last week was the 100th like recorded episode, it's not.
Yeah, it's
the
a
number...
secret menu.
Right, it's not
the secret menu. This is episode 101, but to everyone else, it's 99. We got 99 episodes, and you know, finish that line. I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah, we have good episodes is really what it amounts to. So I hope everyone out there is going to do what I'm going to do this week, which is to listen to all 99 episodes plus the origin episode plus the extra episode, whichever one you consider is the extra episode that week that we recorded two episodes that week ahead of the 100th episode to kind of get ready.
But wait, that's what you're doing?
Well, okay, I have...
Well, on our behalf, thank you for doing that.
Yeah. I have something like 12 hours in the air over the next 3 days, so...
Well, there's more episodes than that. That'll get you through the, not even the first year. I mean, we'll heard of binging, but geez, man.
God, that's
a lot
a
of
lot.
Your own voice.
Yeah, it is a lot of hours. That's it's kind of frightening but cool at the same time. But we'll talk about that probably next week. You know, we don't want to bore you with so much navel gazing this week anyway.
No, that's what next week is for. Every good show has a shitty clips episode. Which is not what we're doing, but
probably not. I mean, we talked about that last week, how it requires us to do editing.
Oh, yeah, work. Yeah, no, that's not happening.
That's not a thing.
No. But I hear rumor that you may be nearby and we may be recording live like in the old days.
Oh, that's a good rumor, I think.
Spread the word, everybody.
Right. Let the hype machine start now.
We could record and then do a podcast meetup, because that's a thing, right?
That's a thing.
That's a thing people do.
It sort of is. You know, I think the problem is because it's a free podcast, we also have nothing to give away.
So I mean, they just would. Our listeners would come and bask in the glow of our presence, face to face. I mean, that's why we record a podcast, because face to face we're too overpowering. The charisma is off the charts.
It's probably a good thing that we're not recording live with each other every week. Otherwise, we would never stop recording.
Right.
The mics would just stay on.
They might explode.
Well, speaking of explosions, I'm sure there's been a pretty good one over at Comcast this week. There was a story that broke this. It was either yesterday or two days ago.
Morning.
Yeah, about the customer service call from hell. And not the caller causing the hell, although I'm sure executives at Comcast might look at it that way. But it was a cancellation call that apparently 10 minutes into it, the caller decided to start recording it. And it goes for at least another 10 minutes of a like amazingly overzealous customer service rep. Essentially trying to talk the person out of canceling their service.
And if it was just some person, like just some Joe Schmo like us, it'd be one thing, but this guy was the former editor-in-chief of Engadget.
So he takes these things kind of seriously then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it ended up kind of blowing up. I remember seeing at least 3 or 4 instances of it kind of making the rounds this morning. We actually were talking about it in the pre-show prep, which doesn't happen, by the way. We don't really prep the show that much, but we did talk about it a little bit, and I think it's funny that that you heard of it kind of from one direction, which is his, and I heard of it from his wife's, because in the call, it's just him talking and the rep. But apparently there was like a wind-up portion of this, because his wife, who's Veronica Belmont, at Veronica on Twitter, what a great, great job grabbing that username. Anyway, she apparently was on the phone with the rep for almost 10 minutes and then exasperatedly gave it up to him. So Ryan Block, who was the like co-founder and editor-in-chief at one point of Engadget, took the call from there. And he's, at least in the part that I listened to, seemed very even-keeled, which really is the only way to get out of those situations. But it does open yourself up if you're a like human being to all sorts of just awful, awful tactics, which are all used and deployed by this customer service rep.
I'm not convinced this customer service rep wasn't a bot, because that's what the conversation sounds like.
Yeah, there's a little bit of repetition, or a lot of it, actually. It keeps coming back to a very kind of repetitive and frankly condescending kind of attack, which is, you know, you want to cancel this, but you must not be in full control of why you want to cancel it. So let me help you like unmake that decision. And, it just never stops. That's really frightening and frankly not a thing.
Yeah, I know we don't really talk about our jobs on this podcast, but since I'm not going to say where I work, but I basically have the same job as that Comcast guy, it was horrendous to hear. It made my skin crawl. It made me so angry.
Oh, did you hear it at the office?
It passed around at the office, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, that must have been really fun.
Yeah. this is why Comcast sucks.
Yeah.
He even says that during the call. Like, this is an example of why I don't want to be with your company.
Right, right. That is, that if nothing else has to be the thing that you take away. It's just that they don't listen to why people don't like them. It pretty much comes down to that.
But that's why I like working in a place where we don't have scripts. My average disconnect call is about 3 minutes.
Oh God.
And they're disconnected.
This guy went at least 15, if not 20 minutes. Do you know if it was the whole call?
I believe the whole call was around 20 minutes.
Wow. Oh, that's awful.
I'm just repeating the same thing. Why would you want to leave the best company in America? Why wouldn't you want faster speeds?
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. I mean, at least the saving grace for it is that it's over the phone. So, you know, you're not seeing the person live when you're kind of talking with them and being dismissed and stuff like that. But if the company, is it Double Robotics? Is that the name?
Yes.
If that company has anything to do with it, you will see them. And not only will you see them, they'll be able to walk around and interact with things. So Double Robotics makes a robot, surprise, called the Your Double Telepresence robot, and it's essentially an iPad on a stick that is connected to a two-wheeled self-balancing thing, and that iPad can be, you can interact with it via an app or a website, and you can control the robot to kind of roll around the office, and you can make the iPad raise or lower to kind of be at the same eye level as someone sitting or standing. And it's kind of, what's the word?
Creepy?
Yes. Yes, that is the word. Yeah.
Frightening?
I'm a little embarrassed to say that they are getting one of these at the office where I work. They don't have it running yet. But the conceit is that people who are out of the office can make themselves in the office, at least temporarily, for the purposes of kind of, you know, that walk-up drive-by meeting to just be like, hey, let's talk about this. Because that's really what you miss when you're off-site and you don't have the ability to kind of stroll around the office. And, you know, you go to the bathroom and on your way back, you say hi to a couple people and then you overhear a conversation. There's no way to do that if you're out of the office all the time. And so this was meant to kind of give some like ability to do that. But I just find them really eerie.
If I had control of one, I would set it so the face always shows Lumberg from Office Space.
Yeah.
And I would just roll up to people's queue and they're like, yeah, I need you to come in on Saturday.
I'm sure it will be used for many pranks and many silly things. I don't know how serious you can really be with it. At the same time, I do see that there is that aspect of working in the office that you miss. I applaud them for giving them a way to kind of bring that back. I'm going to be dodging that every time it rolls past my desk. That's all I know.
Well, the thing is, the camera is right under where the face is mm-hmm. on this robot. So you could hang anything underneath that, and the person talking would not be able to see. But any number of signs that point up to that person and say anything.
Oh my gosh, this is great. That you have just unlocked a wonderful thing.
Hey, you know, when life gives you creepy lemons, make hilarious lemonade.
Excellent. Well, that takes care of kind of some of that funky stuff was getting in the way. So we'll see. I think it will make the office a little more interesting and lively. And I think that was the point of just having kind of fun stuff around the office, because that's kind of been the MO of a bunch of things. Like we just got we talked about it on the show last week when we had Steve Silvas on. He's in charge of our MakerBot, you know, which for a software company is kind of an extravagant purchase, but it's fun. It's cool because what we did was we built a enclosure for a Raspberry Pi that, and I'll link it, but it was, it's called the Nintastic Project. And the whole project is based around making a 3D printed case for a Raspberry Pi that looks like an old school Nintendo NES. And the Raspberry Pi is then further programmed with emulators for Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Arcade, MAME, all that kind of stuff. So I do have a retro gaming box complete with way too many games. Far, far too many to kind of look at and scroll through. I actually probably will go through and clean it up because it has in the ROM set that that someone acquired it has multiple versions of games, like for example Street Fighter 2. Yeah, there's, you know, the original Champion, Hyper Fighting, those editions. But even within those, there was the US version, the Europe version, the Japan version. There was even a, it was listed as Hispanic was the,
what?
The designator. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, no in-game text changes as far as I know. Everything is in English, at least for all of the versions I looked at. So, I don't know.
It's kind I'm sure of, there's something offensive in there.
Yeah. I mean, there was when you launch it, there's the preamble screen of the game booting up, and one of the screens does say, if you are using this game outside of the country of Japan, you are committing a crime. So there's that. So I'm not saying crimes were necessarily committed. That was just what was on the screen when we were looking at something.
Right. And we don't know who provided that or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a very...
It was like a baby left on a firehouse's doorstep. It just showed up one day.
Pretty much.
And you built a home for it.
It's kind of a cool project. I highly recommend it if you're at all interested in kind of old school gaming like I am. It's a wonderful thing. Kind of a less wonderful thing that we found out about was, I don't know if it's not necessarily less wonderful, but Twitter did roll out a new version of its analytics stuff. If you go to analytics.twitter.com and log in, you get a bunch of pretty graphs, and they really just redid this recently. I actually found out I have a friend who works at Twitter, and I may have to get her on the show at some point, but she tweeted about it, and that's how I heard about it, and it looked really neat. It was just really funny because her next tweet immediately after announcing that the analytics stuff is available is that don't blame me if you're unpopular.
Yeah, now you can empirically prove that you're shouting into the void.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I mean, I don't have a lot of followers, so I understand that my tweets really don't go to a lot of people, and that I've never done anything to, like, deliberately increase the number of followers I have. I mean, I don't really tweet at celebrities that much. I don't kind of fish around for...
Do you follow back, bro? Do you follow back? Follow back.
I don't necessarily jump on like trending hashtags, and then also, you know, the haiku format tends to mess up anything kind of programmatically driven to scan tweets. So it
which
doesn't
is
really
by design.
Yeah, I think it's a positive. Anyway, yeah, it's I looked up my own tweets on it, and I have no illusions about my void shouting. So yeah.
Yeah, I read your tweets, Alan.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, man. well, we hope more people read our tweets or Facebook posts or maybe not Google Plus posts, but at least Twitter and Facebook. Although,
hey, if you can find a Google Plus post, then I'm happy you read it.
I did
but
read
otherwise.
just this last week, though, that Google Plus is reversing their real names policy. So now you can have whatever name you want on Google Plus.
Excellent.
If Google Plus is a thing for you, which I don't know, but maybe. It's not impossible.
I can use my fake name on a fake social media site.
Yeah, it's still struggling, in my opinion. I don't know if it's necessarily going to get better. I think this might be too little too late for the website. I mean, they still have not replaced the guy that stepped down who was in charge of Google Plus. So, I don't know. I mean, I still will see posts on it, although I will admit to most of those being mine. But in any case, it's around. It's data that lives somewhere. And that was actually kind of controversial in Norway. So a Tesla owner in Norway got a parking ticket or something like that. And he knew that there was no way that he would have gotten a ticket. And in fact, wanted to prove it using Tesla's data. Because I guess, and I don't have a Tesla, I think they're cool. Full disclosure, they are really cool. they supposedly there's an app that will, you can see like the, you know, you can get status on the car and turn on or off various things from the app. You know, so if it were in someone else's possession, you could see where it was and various things. And so there is kind of a lot of data from the car, and Tesla's even admitted to this. They will take that data and then use it to like figure out driving patterns and then you know, kind of upgrade the car via this method and all that kind of stuff. They've called it in some circles car as a service, which I think is silly, but you know, whatever. And they harvest that data, and this guy wants, you know, the data for whatever day it was, so he could prove, correlate the GPS and the time and say, look, I was only in this spot for 5 minutes and the meter expired in 10 minutes, so there's no way I could have been there 10 minutes. And Tesla's official policy apparently is that you cannot request that data without a court order. But in Norway, there's a law that says that if anyone keeps any data on you at all, you have the right to request it. And so that's what he's doing. I don't think he's doing it through the official channel. He essentially just put it on his blog to see what happened. So Tesla has had a pretty good kind of history of engaging with its customers. And I mean, I hope you would. The cars are like $100,000, so you gotta have some kind of customer service in there, hopefully. So it'd
be interesting to see.
Yeah, right.
why don't you want to drive this car? It's the most efficient car.
No, but I do want to drive this car. I just wish they were a little cheaper. It'd be so cool. Anyway, so I'm hoping Elon Musk or some representative of his, maybe maybe Pepper Potts will come by or something. Anyway, someone should, you know, talk to this guy and then work it out, because I think that's true. It's his car. It's his kind of data about how he uses his car. And I feel like having access to that in some way is good. I mean, it's probably useful. I feel it should be some way of kind of getting that data back. I mean, if they're going to sell you a car and track that data, I feel like there's some kind of mix between like how much ownership kind of trumps like whatever, you know, potential service they're offering from harvesting that data. What do you think?
Yes.
Well, great.
There's not even a debate. Like, yes, if someone collects data on you, you should have access to that data.
Oh, that should be like our thing on the show. Actually, I think it is. I think we've been pretty consistent about that as we've been going.
Yeah. I think we have developed somewhat of a case and a point of record. Over 99 episodes. Data should be free.
And it should be your own if it's yours. Excellent. Well, on kind of an interesting other topic, it's not about...
it's 99 episodes, greatest segue ever. It's another thing.
Yeah, right. On another note, another story in a different context entirely came out about the color black. I guess some materials maker has figured out a way to make a coating that is like super extra black. And by their definition of black is the classic definition of black, which is that it absorbs not only all other colors, but all light in general. And so it does not reflect anything back, so you don't get colors.
99.96% radiation absorption.
Yeah, that's good.
Nuts.
Yeah, so the way it works is it uses everyone's favorite carbon nanotubes, which are wild. I mean, I think we've talked about them a little bit on the show for various things, but in this case, they're being used because the material is set up with essentially little columns of these. I guess they're tubes already, so they don't have to be in columns, but they're set so as light comes in, they go into the tube, and then it doesn't come back out. It's, roaches check in, but they don't check out. There is a reference that is probably too old. Kind of similarly to many other shows, we're going to keep on this kind of
99 track of episodes of maintaining your status as the elder statesman of the podcast.
Well, I think they use the black stuff has the applications where you would use it in a situation where you wanted light to not be encumbered at all. So in lasers, essentially, all sorts of things. It has a lot of applications, but
flight controls,
lasers.
Yeah. Flight controls and like telescopes.
Yeah.
All kinds of good stuff. And potentially metal bands. I'd like to see metal bands jumping on board like, this is the blackest black.
You could put it on a Tesla, and then they could say that, you know, you didn't see it as it went by. But then the data would be available. So I'm really, really trying to tie it back to that last story. It's not really working.
Let it go, Alan.
I got
let it go.
that I don't think we're gonna be able to save that one. But maybe we can save this one, because it's about a really interesting use of really just humans and data, which is the Universal Typeface Project. I think that's actually the website. It's like theuniversaltypeface.com. We can look it up, but it's...
I'm looking at it right now.
Nice. It's a project to have people submit their handwriting from different countries and then essentially take an average of all of those letters in the... I think they're going with kind of the, you know, the English 26 letter alphabet, but to try and take an average of human handwriting across all sorts of different things. So they do break it down by like age and location and handedness, like right or left handed. So I thought that was interesting, because that does make a distinction in how you form letters and stuff. But they're trying to make a font which is the average of human handwriting. It's a neat project, kind of an interesting take on how the world has kind of evolved language-wise, or at least handwriting-wise. So,
do you think it's possible that it's actually a conspiracy that robots are trying to co-opt our handwriting so they can learn it, so they could replicate it? Or is that just me being a paranoid person?
That is an interesting use of all of that data. That is a good point. I wonder if we should submit handwriting to obfuscate how we actually write, and kind of, you know, like if you're right-handed, write the alphabet with your left hand to give it kind of false, right, broken data.
Or you just gave some random website your every handwriting for every letter that you write, so you could just forge your signature.
This does, on further inspection, seem like a bad idea, huh?
It's a really cool concept, but I'm a pessimist. So. I'm not a pessimist, just when it is in regards to computers and robots.
Yes, that's another fun theme that we've definitely developed over time. So I think we'll We'll stick with that. I mean, I think they're if it's not being used for nefarious purposes, it is kind of a fun and at least different use of big data, which doesn't, at least on the face of it, sound terribly terribly nefarious. Although that's why it's a printed alphabet, not a cursive alphabet. Unless you sign your checks by printing your name. No one does that, right? No one even signs checks anymore. That's not a thing. Come on.
What? I sign my checks? You have to.
Yeah, I haven't.
Will they take them if you don't?
I'm sure they won't. I mean, they will take it. In fact, they'll take it even if you know, it's not made out correctly. It will get reconciled by the bank at that point. But like one of my friends, he accidentally deposited his I don't even know how he did this. He somehow deposited his rent check to someone else. I guess he was supposed to write a check to the company he was working for as some kind of like mistake about billing or whatever, and he accidentally included his rent check in that mail, and they cashed it. And I guess it was eventually disputed and dealt with, but it just shows how kind of automated some of those processes are. It's just like, that's a check, it's come to me, it comes from this account, looks good. but I think like, I know that you can have, at least with Bank of America, you can have Bank of America issue checks on your behalf, and it doesn't sign them, as far as I know. But I guess that's slightly different. It's not like you write a check and don't sign it and then give it to somebody. So, I don't know. don't give them your signature handwriting.
Yeah. And there's an option on this site for you to post your picture. So not only can they steal your handwriting, but also your likeness and your name.
Yeah, and I bet if you're, you know, if your eyes are clear, they can probably pick up all of that biometric data too.
Wait, so you're saying if your eyes aren't clear, like if you were really stoned, they wouldn't be able to do that?
I just meant clearly visible in the picture. Oh, okay. You know, okay. Your hair's not in the way or something.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Wow, this is turning out to be a not a thing, right?
Yeah, I was really on board until I had thought about it for about 30 seconds. Wait a minute.
This is why we have the podcast.
It's brought to you by BIC. It's from a pen company. I'm on to you, BIC. You're on my you made my list. BIC is now on the list with penguins and robots. And the NSA. And Comcast. Wow.
Well, clearly on our list, because we've talked about it a few times on the show, is True Detective. And that's not on the bad list. That's on the really good list.
That is definitely a thing list.
I can finally agree to it in person. I went and binge watched all of that last week over, I think it was supposed to be more than 4 days, but it ended up being like 4 days. Because I watched the first two and was like, this is great, but there are only six left, so I wanted to stretch it out. But every day I ended up just watching two of them. And this was even after talking to someone I work with who said that the last episode, you should just watch it completely on its own. Like, don't put anything next to it. Have a break. Watch it on its own. And I think I watched the seventh episode, then had dinner, and then watched the eighth episode.
Yeah, it's a palate cleanser, literally. Yeah.
Actually, I probably still need a palate cleanser from it. The some of the scenes in it are very disturbing. Like, not messing around disturbing. And it's amazing because not everything is explicitly shown. In fact, some bits of it are are not shown as a, I think, you know, the theater of your mind is probably gorier than whatever they would put on the screen in some of those respects. But I think if there was anything I was just the most surprised about, it's that Woody Harrelson gets chicks.
Yeah, he does pretty well. Yeah.
Like a lot. Like he has the well, first of all, he's married in the show to Michelle Monaghan from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Uh-huh.
And other things, who's, you know, very attractive and
talented actors.
And then, oh yes, no, I meant
jeez, Alan. I'm sorry, that's not fair.
Fair point. Yes, a very good actress, very good actress. But and then he sleeps around on her with the court reporter in the show, and then again with like, it just
he is a flawed character, to be sure.
Yes. Oh, and that's something that I thought was interesting, is that that there's kind of a trend right now to have kind of the anti-hero, and I think that came up most obviously in Breaking Bad, of how Walt's character was deeply flawed, but you root for him. And so having those kinds of characters was a trend and still is. But the interesting thing for Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson's characters, Rust and Marty, was that they're flawed, and yes, you root for them, but they don't like get away with it like Walt does.
Yeah, in but fact, does Walt really get away with it?
I guess maybe not ultimately, right? But it's not that level of kind of up and down. It's just, you know, this is awful. Like, all of these situations are bad. There's so many things that are going wrong, but it's fascinating to watch. I thought it was just really well written, and the tone was so creepy and good.
And it's consistent, because it had the same writer and the same director for all 8 episodes.
Right.
Which is not something you get on a lot of shows.
And from the rumors that I've heard, they're actually not going to get for the second season.
No, they're not.
Like, it's not, not only is it not the director from the first season, it's, I read that they are going to have directors like per episode. Which, I don't know.
But they're getting good directors.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're getting some people from Game of Thrones and some other shows that are good.
Yeah. And apparently all the casting rumors for the show are wrong. Something to that effect. I read a blurb about that. I know that they've had a lot of people attached to the show because I think they've publicly said that they're doing a different setting and a different set of characters for the second season.
I've heard it's going to have 3 leads and it's going to be set in California.
But I've heard nothing confirmed about anyone that's in it. And there have been so many people attached, like Jessica Chastain. What's the guy? The guy that is in Luther?
Idris Elba?
Yes.
Well, it's one of those things where the show catches fire, and so anyone who's huge, people want to see them on the show after seeing, you know, McConaughey and Harrelson.
Sure.
You know, kind of, I don't know if I'd say it's part of the McConaughey sense.
I like that a lot.
I would say for me, the highlights of that show were the episode where he goes undercover and they have that long tracking shot.
Oh, yeah.
When just everything goes to shit.
Yeah. I wish I had not heard about that before watching the show. I unfortunately was spoiled that was coming. And so, I mean, it's still really impressive. It's a great, great shot. But the existence of it, right. Was spoiled for me. But
that one and the recreated crime scene where they're telling the story to the investigators and then you're seeing what actually happened when they catch Reggie Ledoux.
Right.
Yeah.
That was also well done. I do like that they took the, what is it, the unreliable narrator thing and essentially exploded it like over the entire show. It's like the first, I would say, 3/4 of the show are have that kind of undercurrent of, you know, these are you know, these are characters that don't always tell the truth, and even when they're telling the truth, they're suspect about like what they know. Like Matthew McConaughey's character, he's like, I'm not sure if I was tripping or not.
Right.
And it's just really nice. It's just, it's gritty, but in a very realistic way. Not in a like kind of gritty for grit's sake, which I would argue. What did I see recently that kind of fell in that? Oh, that's right. I had a Dark Knight Rises was just kind of randomly on.
Oh, back to our first podcast. Bringing it back around. 98 episodes, or this is really 100 episodes after that.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's a good place to end this one. leave him one more, Alan.
Right. Well, we're looking for some good stuff for next week. We have a couple ideas that I think you'll enjoy, and we have that theme song coming up, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's all done. That's all done. We know exactly. We've got the script. I mean, we don't get scripts. It's all gonna be ready.
Cool. Well, I look forward to it. I will see you next week, Brandon.
Till next time, Alan.